Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Brian Lynn, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present the next part in our series on America's presidents. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Some women in China are finding out they do not have to be skilled, like 15-year-old Olympic champion Nishiya Momiji of Japan, to enjoy skateboarding. There is a version of skateboarding called surf skating that is a little easier for older people to learn. The city sport is giving women like 40-year-old Mina Zhao some time off from their COVID-19 worries. Zhao said she felt cooped up by Beijing's recent COVID-19 restrictions. The measures closed exercise centers like gyms and parks, but she discovered surf skating on social media and decided to give it a try. She learned by going to a free lesson near Beijing's famous Water Cube swimming stadium in May. At that time, the lessons had about 12 people. Now, almost 100 come each week to learn from the teacher, a professional dancer named Duo Lan. Zhao even brings her husband and son. She said skateboarding is having a positive effect on her life. She said she has lost some weight and is not feeling as bad about how COVID restrictions may hurt her child's education. Zhao said she feels good about herself now, and she feels better spending more time away from home. She even changed her hair color. It is now lighter than her natural color. She said the sport helps her feel comfortable being herself. Sometimes, when she is feeling worried, she even uses the skateboard inside her home. Surf skating also got attention partly because of the buzz snow sports like snowboarding got at the Beijing Winter Olympics earlier this year. Many people say surf skating feels like snowboarding, but skaters can make slow, wide turns without having to worry about hills or snow. Chen Yani, 29, is another woman who tried surf skating this year and feels more calm. "You feel so free," she said. Yani also found out about the sport on social media. She said, "Although she is getting close to 30, the sport makes her feel young. I love this feeling," she said. "It's like being a teenager again." One Chinese search engine said the number of people looking for the term land surfboard rose by 50 times in June compared to the year before. JD.com is an online seller based in Beijing. It said sales of surf skateboards went up by 80% in June compared to the same month in 2021. Burning Ice is a skateboard store with 5 shops in Beijing. A store supervisor who did not want his name to be used said the shops have had a 300% sales increase this year compared to the year before. Skateboards and surf skateboards cost between $60 and $600. They make up 50% of the rise in sales. And women are the buyers 70% of the time. Some women said they took up skating when they found out they would not be able to travel because of COVID-19. 34-year-old Yo-Yo works in business, but likes to dive and surf when she goes to the beach. She said, "Skating makes her feel that I have returned to the beach." And she added, "It is hot in the summer, but I have the wind in my hair and I feel free." I'm Dan Friedell.
Micronesia has likely become the final nation in the world with a population of more than 100,000 to experience an outbreak of COVID-19. For more than 2.5 years, the Pacific Island nation successfully avoided any outbreaks because of its physical isolation and border controls. People who flew into the country with the virus did not spread it because all new arrivals were required to quarantine. But those defenses could not keep out the highly infectious Omicron version of the virus forever. On Tuesday, Micronesia's government announced it knew of several cases across 2 of the nation's 4 states. Officials said that in Kosrae State, 25 people were confirmed to have the virus after showing up at a local hospital. An additional 10 people from a family of 11 tested positive after a medical team visited them. Officials said they had also found 7 community cases in the state of Pohnpei. State leaders there have asked all locals to avoid public gatherings and to always wear masks. The outbreak comes less than 2 weeks before Micronesia planned to end its quarantine restrictions and reopen its borders on August 1st. Last year, Micronesia became one of the few countries to put in place a COVID-19 vaccination requirement for all citizens who are eligible or able to get one. It threatened to withhold federal money from any individuals or business owners who did not follow the rules. As a result, it has had high vaccination rates. Almost all nations in the world have now experienced COVID-19 outbreaks. The Central Asian nation of Turkmenistan is the only other country with more than 100,000 people that has not reported any cases. Experts believe that there has likely been a major outbreak there that the secretive country has chosen to ignore. There has also been mixed information from North Korea. In May, North Korea publicly admitted it had a COVID-19 outbreak. Since then, it has reported 4.8 million cases, with people having high body temperatures. But state media identified only a small number of them as confirmed COVID-19 patients.
Companies are continuing to develop artificial intelligence, AI, systems for use in many industries. While the technology has gotten much better in recent years, it still has major limitations. Some technology experts say one of the best ways to improve AI would be for companies to share more of their development methods with others. AI development involves feeding huge amounts of data into powerful computers. The computers are given a set of instructions called an algorithm to process the data. One of the main goals of AI research has centered on building systems that can interact smoothly with humans. An example of this kind of system would be an AI tool that can hold a conversation with a human in real time. An AI system might also be able to write a letter, news story, or poem on its own. The computers can perform such actions because they have been trained on data from the real world. Much of the data comes from writings and images from the Internet. The AI systems are known as large language models because they have been trained on huge collections of written material and other forms of media. Some systems are trained on multiple world languages.
One AI system called GPT-3 is backed by American technology company Microsoft. It is designed to produce many forms of human-like writing. For example, developers say the system has been trained to do things like write a cover letter for a job or create a Shakespearean-like poem on the beauty of Mars. But the GPT-3 system has difficulties performing other actions that seem much simpler. An example of this happened when college professor Gary Smith asked the system a basic question about whether a person could walk on stairs using their hands. Smith, a Pomona College economics professor and expert on AI technology, said the AI system answered, "Yes, it is safe to walk upstairs on your hands if you wash them first."
Tevin Leskow is a research engineer at U.S.-based AI startup Hugging Face. He told the Associated Press that some of the AI systems have gotten very good at writing with the proficiency of human beings. But Leskow said something the machines struggle with is being factual. It looks very coherent. It's almost true, but it's often wrong, he added. AI can also produce results that researchers disapprove of, involving minority groups and people of color based on the data the systems were trained on.
Because large AI systems require powerful computing resources, most are operated by large corporations such as Google, Microsoft, and Meta. This limits the ability of smaller companies, non-profit groups, and education organizations to research AI systems and methods. Competitive pressure to build the best performing systems is the main reason technology companies keep their development efforts secret, said Percy Liang. He directs Stanford University's Center for Research on Foundation Models. For some companies, this is their secret sauce, Liang told the AP.
But Leskow helped build a new AI system called Bloom, designed to demonstrate how an open model can help support research efforts and improve the technology. Many large AI systems are mainly trained on English and Chinese data. But the developers of Bloom said it is able to produce writing in 46 natural languages and works with 13 programming languages.
More than 1,000 researchers from more than 70 countries cooperated on the Bloom project. Any researcher can now download, run, and study the performance of the model. The developers said they plan to keep expanding Bloom, which they describe as the first seed of a living family of models. The organization behind Bloom is Big Science. Thomas Wolfe is one of its leaders. He told the AP the developer of GPT-3, OpenAI, has publicly shared some information about its AI modeling methods. But Wolfe said OpenAI has not shared important details about how GPT-3 filters its data and has not made processed data available to outside researchers. So we can't actually examine the data that went into the GPT-3 training, he said.
Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, recently launched a new language model called OPT-175B. It uses publicly available data from a range of sources, including user comments from Reddit, official U.S. patent records, and corporate emails. The director of Meta AI, Joel Pinot, says the company has been open about the data the model uses, as well as its research and training methods. Pinot told the AP that openness in AI research is rare, but her company believes it can help outside researchers identify and correct results the researchers disapprove of that appear in AI models. It is hard to do this. We are opening ourselves for huge criticism, Pinot said. We know the model will say things we won't be proud of, she added. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Zachary Taylor, the 12th president. He took office in 1849. Taylor had some things in common with earlier presidents. Like six others before him, he was born in Virginia. Like George Washington and Andrew Jackson, Taylor was a war hero. And, like William Henry Harrison, he died in office. But Taylor brought at least one special trait to the presidency. Although he was officially elected as a member of the Whig Party, Taylor considered himself an independent. When Zachary Taylor was a baby, his family left Virginia. They moved west to a tobacco plantation in Kentucky. There, the Taylors were financially successful. By the time Zachary was a young man, his family owned a number of enslaved people and over 4,000 hectares of land. Taylor took possession of some of his family's land. He also had cotton plantations in the southern states of Mississippi and Louisiana.
he too depended on enslaved people to do most of the work. But Taylor was unlike many wealthy farmers in the South. He had always wanted to be a soldier. When Taylor was 24 years old, he became an officer in the U.S. Army. Shortly after, he married Margaret Smith. In time, they had 5 daughters and 1 son. But Taylor directed most of his attention to his military career. For about 20 years, he tried to keep peace between Native American tribes and white Americans. Sometimes the job meant leading attacks against Native Americans. At times, it meant defending their lands from white settlers. In either case, his public standing as a good soldier grew. His troops called him Old Rough and Ready because he was willing to fight and suffer alongside them. Then, in the Mexican-American War of the 1840s, Taylor became really famous. He led U.S. troops to victory in several major battles, including ones at Monterrey and Buena Vista. In a well-known story, the powerful Mexican general Santa Anna surrounded Taylor and his small number of troops. Santa Anna sent a message demanding that they surrender. Taylor reportedly said, "Tell him to go to hell." The two sides clashed the next morning. Santa Anna had about 3 times the men that Taylor had. Yet, by late that day, Taylor's soldiers had defeated Santa Anna's. Taylor's success as a general helped the United States win the war against Mexico. In the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, Mexico agreed to give up claims to, or sell to the U.S., more than 1.3 million kilometers of its lands, including what are now the states of Texas and California. But the new lands almost immediately caused problems. At the time of the next U.S. presidential election, public opinion in the country was severely divided. The issue was whether to permit slavery in the new lands won at the end of the war with Mexico. In general, Northerners opposed expanding slavery. In general, Southerners supported it. To appeal to both these groups, the major parties at the time looked to Taylor to be their candidate for president. The Democrats and the Whigs reasoned that Taylor was already well-known and well-liked. Historian Michael Holt said, in 1848, Taylor was the most popular man in America. But Taylor was not really political. He called himself an independent. He shared some beliefs with both major parties at the time. But mostly, he wanted to keep the nation together. In the end, he agreed to be the candidate of the Whig Party. During the campaign, he did not take a stand on any of the major issues. His fame as a military general carried him into the White House. The truth was that Taylor did have an opinion on slavery. He did not want to expand it, especially in areas that did not support cotton or sugar farms. So, once in office, he proposed a change to the rules about how new territories would become states. The change would let white, American, male settlers in California and New Mexico decide whether they wanted slavery. Then those areas could enter the Union immediately as states. Taylor aimed to quiet the debate about slavery, but his idea angered almost everybody. Some U.S. lawmakers believed the president had cut them out of the decision. Northerners said Taylor's proposal did not go far enough. It did not solve some of the other issues related to slavery. And Southerners realized that settlers in California and New Mexico would almost surely reject slavery and give free states a majority in Congress. In one dramatic incident, some South Carolina officials called a meeting to discuss withdrawing from the Union. In answer, Taylor threatened to hang them. But before Taylor or his idea could get too far, the president became sick. The story is that he attended outdoor celebrations to mark the nation's birthday, July 4th. Then he went for a walk. The weather was very hot. To cool off, Taylor ate uncooked fruit and drank iced milk. That night, he told others about pain in his stomach. 5 days later, he was dead. His doctor wrote that Taylor died of cholera morbus, a general term for severe digestive problems. A few people thought he might have been poisoned. The suspicion remained until 1991, when medical officials examined Taylor's remains. They confirmed that he died of natural causes. A more recent study offers more details. Jane McHugh and Philip A. Makoviak say that Taylor was a victim of the same problem that killed Presidents William Henry Harrison and James Polk: dirty water in the White House. Taylor's death, while unfortunate, did not cause a political crisis. John Tyler had already established the rule that if a president dies in office, the vice president becomes president. But Taylor's death did likely change the direction of history. His replacement, Millard Fillmore, did not try to hold the Union together by force. Instead, he joined with politicians who wanted to compromise on the issue. The compromise legislation delayed but did not really settle the debate. In time, the division between North and South led to the American Civil War, and members of Taylor's own family became linked to the states that withdrew from the Union. One of his daughters had married Jefferson Davis, who became the president of the Confederacy. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.